That, of course, the wonderful Walk On by the Stranglers. And I've got the even more wonderful and fearless Tony Gosling on the line. Hi, Tony.
Hi, Pippa.
Lovely to have you back on Radio Jones. Always a pleasure. Let's start with the potential regime change at the headquarters of FIFA. Potential.
I know. Yeah, everyone's on tenterhooks because we're not quite sure what the result's going to be yet. But it does look as if Sepp Blatter might manage to... I mean, what they're saying here on the BBC, for example, is cling on to power, which I find rather irritating. Actually, it is a democratic vote, and the guy is standing. There's been very little analysis of the chap Prince Ali from Jordan, who's standing against him, that the United States and Britain and UEFA are supposedly supporting. Now, Prince Ali is a former general in the Jordanian army. Jordan is a monarchy. They don't have elections. They do, but it's actually the whole country is, run by the royal family. And this is not a democratic place, and it's completely a puppet of the West in the Middle East. It's a place where the ISIS were originally training, and forces were from the West, and armies were training ISIS in Jordan. And he's a general. He was trained at Sandhurst here in England. Looks to me a bit like a kind of stooge for the West that they want to take over. I think it's important that these international organisations are not just sporting ones. I'm talking also about things like the International Atomic Energy Authority, the United Nations, particularly the UN Security Council, are run by honest brokers. Because we're seeing increasingly in these big institutions, global institutions, the IMF, another example, that the West has decided it's going to control these things. So this is why, yeah, absolutely right, regime change is the mantra. I mean, we've seen it in Iraq, obviously, with Saddam Hussein, who was executed eventually. We've seen the mob rule in Libya, where also Gaddafi was executed. And now it seems this same kind of hateful approach is being applied to football, which is appalling. Hang on. The only thing which is really going to make peace in the world with all the financial and political shenanigans going on as they are is the sporting world, where we can still have a good game of football. And it seems they don't even want to allow that to be run by an honest broker.
What's interesting, Tony, as well, and I think Vladimir Putin himself has actually commented on this, and quite rightly too, why is the USA so involved in this?
Well, isn't it fascinating? I mean, we've seen this actually with Brussels and with Washington encroaching further and further into other countries like Spain and England and Britain's legal system with the European arrest warrant, which is basically pinning Julian Assange in the Ecuadorian embassy so he can't move, even though he's one of the most radical, probably the most radical publisher in the world. He's the sort of person we need to be helping, not locking up. And a similar thing, of course, with the United States extradition agreement with Britain. So what they're trying to do, this is incredible, sounds incredible, but the Italians actually arrested several FBI agents in Italy who they caught over there doing trying to arrest people and then to illegally take them back to America. This is a few years ago now.
What was the outcome of that?
I'm not sure, because it's one of those stories that I didn't manage to get to the bottom of eventually. I think that there was a court case in Italy, and these FBI guys were, I'm not sure if they were released or whatever, but anyway, they were certainly prosecuted eventually by the Italian authorities because they been overstepping the mark. They'd come over supposedly for a visit, but then they were actually acting as US police in Italy. Now, look, the Americans have got ideas way above their station, and I think one of the key things to take home from all of this is the US is a dying empire. What happens to dying empires is they desperately try and clamour to control the global game, even though they actually don't really have the respect or the power to do it. And it's a bit like the last days of Rome, the Roman Empire sort of desperately trying, even though it's lost any kind of real vestige of democracy, to rule the world.
or the dying of some dictator, as we saw with Stalin and Hitler making mad last-ditch attempts to wield power before they finally had to give up the ghost.
That's right. And also, you know, a lot of this is looks to me, anyway, on the surface of it, as something which has been orchestrated from the US. I mean, the US isn't really even a major soccer-playing nation, and yet it seems that they want to... Look, what's really going on behind the scenes here is we've got a major attempt by the Americans to split Russia from Europe. I mean, this has been going on, and I've followed the Bilderberg conferences since the mid-1990s, and they were set up just after, 10 years after World War II, in the same place as they fought the Battle of Arnhem in Arnhem, in Oosterbeek, in Holland, during the war in 1944. 10 years after that, the first Bilderberg meeting took place, and it was chaired by a former SS officer for 20 years until the 1975 Lockheed scandal, when Prince Bernhard was ejected. And anyway, I mean, this is an organisation which was set up to politically weld together Europe, or Western Europe anyway, and the United States and Canada. So the idea was that the Europeans were not allowed to be friendly with the Russians, with the Soviet, as it was at the time, the Soviet Union, and they did an incredibly good job, if you can call it good, at splitting East and Western Europe, because that was in the US interests, and they were scared that countries like Italy would elect, for example, communist prime ministers, and the CIA were very active in Italy in fixing elections to make sure the communists didn't come to power. Now, there's been a lot of political interference by the US, and this to me seems like, I mean, they can see, they see it as a disaster. We see it in Europe as a great thing, that we should be sending all these European football teams and South American football teams to Russia for the 2018 World Cup. But the Americans hate this idea because it means they'd be losing control of Western Europe. This, I think, is actually really at the bottom of this attempt at regime change in FIFA, and I think the FIFA people, most of the rest of the world, other than people who are just only exposed to the Western media, can see straight through it.
Well, the FIFA, as I understand it, brought in a US attorney, Michael Garcia, whose name is very, very familiar, and I'm sure you'll tell me why, for something other than this. And he looked into the dealings, into the awarding of the century, should I say, the 2018 to Russia and the 2022 World Cup to Qatar, and came out with some findings that we don't actually know, because the 350-page report was basically suppressed. And am I right then in understanding that because of the suppressing of that report by FIFA, that this is something to do with why America now are bringing in the strong arm of the law, in effect?
Well, no, as I understand it, it was an internal FIFA report, so that, you know, you can understand why they don't necessarily, if they're doing it's like an audit or something. If you're doing an internal report, you don't necessarily want the world to know about it. You want the board to be informed. I mean, I don't see Blatter as... I don't see him as a corrupt individual himself, and I think if he was, he would probably have been arrested earlier this week. It's just that the US end and some of their European connections and others have been arrested in this, and this to me seems like an attempt to do what they've done to governments and other international institutions. But to bring this into the realm of sport really shows they're not sporting people. They aren't fair dealers. They don't want a kind of any kind of alternative to US hegemony. And actually, I was chatting to a guy called Chris Mulligan, whose father was in US intelligence a couple of years ago, and he was saying what they did in Vietnam was they actually started the war by just lies in the newspaper about a picnic, because the North and South Vietnamese and the Americans had all had a picnic in Vietnam in a field somewhere and had a lovely day. But a news item went into the world news that there'd been a shootings at this picnic and that people had been killed. And what they were doing with that article was what he described as hardening the sides. So when there are people that are actually quite friendly and on good terms with each other, as the North and South Vietnamese were before the war started, actually not too bad anyway, what they do is they'd convince people that actually you had to choose one side or the other and you couldn't actually be friendly to both. And this hardening of the sides has been going on over really, ever since sort of 10 years or so after the Second World War, is you've got to choose. I mean, after the end of the Cold War, there was this thing called the peace dividend, wasn't there? Everything was supposed to get easier and better. And there was no enemy anymore, but then the Islamic enemy came along and now the Russian enemy is coming back. I don't believe these people are enemies at all. I think what they're doing is they're trying to get us to choose in an almost like football tribal way between one side or the other. And the idea is if you support the other side, then you're sort of evil. There's something wrong with you. No, actually, there's no need to choose sides. But that's what the US do psychologically. That's what it's called, hardening the sides. So there's nowhere on earth that you can actually be supportive of Russia, not even in football. That's their objective.
Now, what about the outcome of this this vote? We assume that Sepp Blatter is probably going to keep his position. You rightly say he's probably not guilty of wrongdoing himself. But the fact is, Tony, he's heading up and has been doing for many years an organisation which is very, very corrupt. Surely he has to stand up and be counted.
Well, look, yes, I think the fact that this is all out in the open is good. But if Blatter himself, as it seems is the case, has actually been trying to do something about the corruption and he's been finding it difficult, and now some people who have been arrested, because of course this stuff, I mean, we're talking about pretty high level. I mean, look at who's been causing the corruption for a start, apart from the US, generally the US delegates at FIFA. It's accused anyway that the sponsors like Nike are actually involved in the corruption. So it's very difficult for him as the head of world football to keep a handle on all this, especially when you're dealing with massive powerful companies and sponsors. This is one of the reasons I really dislike sponsorship in sport, is because with that, and in media, by the way, because with the sponsorship money comes a lot of power, a lot of control, a lot of clout, and that, to me, should be kept out of it. I mean, what they do, for example, I mean, using the media as an example in Ireland, with the Irish State Broadcasting, RTE, is they have two completely separate offices, one for sponsorship and one for the making of the programmes, and the sponsors have got absolutely no influence whatsoever, and the advertisers, over the programmes that are made by RTE. And that's what you need in football. And the more the sponsors sort of turning up at these congresses, and, you know, the more powerful, the more clout they have, the more they can say, oh, we want a bigger logo on our football shirt, the more power they get in the sport, the worse the sport is for it. And I'll give you an example of that. Just here in Bristol, we've got a little club that's been going for about 50, 60 years in Almondsbury, Hallen Club it's called, which is several generations of various families up there in amateur football have been playing there, and they've just been told a couple of weeks ago, oh, we're putting up the rent about 6 or 7 times the rent that you used to pay, because we're trying to get some houses built on this football field. Now, there's no real backup from the City Council, there's no backup from South Gloucestershire Council or the MPs in the area, and they're just finding, well, we're just going to have to close this club. Now, the money is just destroying football. I mean, as most people know, it's taken a lot of the fun out of football. The loyalty of the players isn't really to the town that they were born in anymore or the football club that they're from. It's much more to the money and the paycheck. And this really, I think, has destroyed morale. There's also which has probably got something to do with it, England's not very good performance over the last few years as a team. But that's my feeling is money is slowly destroying it. When they started with the Premier League, I mean, there were a lot of warnings saying, look, if you go into having a Super League, you're going to lose the fun and the accessibility. Of course, this is another thing, is it's so expensive to go and see football now. But the real fun is to play it, isn't it? I mean, it's like most sports, not to just sit and watch it on the TV, to actually go out and play it. And that's becoming more and more difficult. For this little club I was talking about here in Bristol, it's going to become, in a few months, impossible for them to even play anymore.
Yeah.
So, you know, we've got to have it's okay to watch it on the TV and to have these big clubs, but we've also got to support the little ones too, and we're not doing that here in Britain. So who are we to talk about who should be running FIFA?
But, you know, Tony, is it all right to watch it on the TV and get out, derive pleasure from that? Because actually the bottom line is, as we're seeing with Qatar, is that, for the sake of our entertainment, should the 2022 World Cup go ahead, when it's scheduled to do so, two workers a day are dying. You know, there are people who are living in poverty who are not being paid, who are building these vanity projects on behalf of these corrupt dictators, if you like, who are sort of who are buying their way into these situations, and there are people dying.
Well, that's right. I mean, I'm certainly not supporting the state of Ghana, like Jordan, another absolute monarchy, you know, where you've got, and Saudi Arabia, similar kind of regime they've got there, and appalling conditions for people. But at the end of the day, I think, in a way, we should be also, I mean, not financially rewarding these countries, of course, that's completely wrong, but it draws attention to the politics of the country to actually have the sport taking place in there. We would probably never know about the conditions of Qatari workers if it hadn't been for the fact that the football, the 2022 games, looks like are going to be there. I think there's a much better case for criticising the Qatari regime. But if we're going to be actually fair about football, and it is going to be kept out of politics, even if, you know, people are dying in that country, we should still be, I think, having the games there, because it draws attention to, it brings loads and loads of witnesses, if you want, over to the country to see how it's what it's really like, you know. And if it's going to be a level playing field across the world for football, then we have to be playing football in regimes we despise as well as ones we like.
Interesting way of looking at it. And Tony, look, we haven't got long, but I want you to just make a comment about what happened last week with the Queen's speech. Many are saying that it's the most right-wing Queen's speech in decades. Obviously, sort of, towing the line with the new Tory administration.
Yeah, it certainly is, isn't it? And, you know, it's interesting that the human rights, the manifesto Conservatives were saying we're going to be pulling out of the European Human Rights Charter, and that's not in there. Well, I'll tell you why it's not in there, and that's because the Conservatives have now got complete control of the child abuse inquiry, because I think, you know, that's why the Human Rights Act and the European Court of Human Rights was such a worry to the Conservatives. There's been all sorts of ridiculous stories in the Daily Mail about why the human rights is such a bad idea. Actually, it's because it protects children, and this is one of the things that they're very, I think, very, very worried about in the Tory party. Because, I mean, we had all the scandal about Lord Jenner just before the election, which was interesting, wasn't it? You know, that it's a Labour peer, mm-hmm. but actually most of the people who've been being accused here, the vast majority, including people in MI6 and the establishment, who've also been accused of these crimes, which actually not just child sexual abuse, but also murder of children, to keep them quiet when it looked like that they might try and blow the whistle, possibly even the murder of MPs, including Stephen Milligan, Conservative MP, mm-hmm. who actually just before he died said, "I want to expose my own party, people mm-hmm. in my own party, and clean up my own party." That many of these people are connected very closely with the British establishment at the top levels, including royalty, and abuse alleged to have been taking place in Buckingham Palace as well, and that's why, I think. But I mean, the real problem is going to be this snoopers charter that was blocked by the Lib Dems in the last government. Fair play to them, well done. But the problem here is that what's been going on for the last decade or so, according to Edward Snowden and his leaks, is that GCHQ and the National Security Agency and other NATO countries, signals intelligence services, have actually been breaking the law. These people are criminals, and they should be arrested. People sitting in their desks at GCHQ.
Indeed.
Who've been wiretapping people without a warrant. And so what the snoopers charter will do is it will bring what they're doing currently, right this very second, within the law, so that in future they can't be arrested. This is an appalling despotic government doing this kind of thing, where because the people breaking the law have been so-called on their side, they're actually now changing the law to help them. And there's also a very good Panorama documentary last night on television, one of the best panoramas I've seen for decades, actually, about the British Army collusion with loyalist terrorists in Northern Ireland. And these are the sorts of things which we really need to... I mean, the criminals, it seems to me, are very, very few of them are poor people. They're mostly establishment types, and many are also retired British generals. One of them, actually, on this panorama last night was being doorstepped by the BBC, saying You were a general in Northern Ireland. You were in charge. And he ran away, didn't want to say anything, got into his car and drove off, you know. So we've heard a lot over the years about how terrible the Republicans were, and it's now coming out that actually the British Army was supplying explosives to loyalist terrorists and also covering up, you know, literally scores and scores of murders, and that they were protecting serial killers on the loyalist side who'd been out killing indiscriminately. That is to say, the sectarian killings where someone was killed just because they were a Catholic. They had nothing to do with the struggle at all.
Gosh, Tony, you just opened up a whole another interview.
Well, I would suggest people watch that on the iPlayer if you can, because it was probably, you know what it reminded me of? It was the Cook Report from the 1990s. Yeah. And I've not seen such a good BBC panorama programme for decades, literally. It was absolutely riveting and pretty disturbing, and there was pictures of Tom King and Margaret Thatcher there, and you're starting to think, well, actually, this was all going on under the Conservatives' watch, so no wonder they've waited till after the election before they showed it.
Absolutely. Tony, I'm going to have to get you back on to talk about that, because you've just scratched the tip of the iceberg. But thanks, as always, to you for your time. Thank you.
Okie doke, and watch that on the iPlayer on BBC Panorama. Fantastic watch.
Indeed.
And it reminds us of the good old golden days of television, when they actually used to have stuff worth
proper
watching.
Proper television, absolutely. It was, I saw it. It was phenomenal, I must say.
All right, Pippa.
Well, thank you. Tony, thank you so much.
Bye.